Thank you for doing this, bro.
Yeah, no problem.
It's an honor. I've been trying to make this happen for a while, so pretty hyped. I was thinking about this episode before coming here, and I was, I've been a fan of your graffiti for a very long time. Since I started writing graffiti, I've been aware of your existence. I've seen, all the things everyone's seen with the media and the older media, the newer media. And I'm like thinking about how a lot of people are into graffiti. A lot of people dedicate themselves to graffiti, dedicate themselves to a lot of things, but few people take it to the final level, or like few people take it to a really high degree. And it's a just plain consensus that you are one of those people within graffiti. You're one of the people that took it to a high degree, and kind of everything that you touch, you smashed. Why did you start writing graffiti, and how did you look at it back then when you started?
Thanks for having me. So I'm 30 plus years into this. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, which is a northern suburb of Los Angeles. And as far back as I can remember, I was just obsessed with it. Originally I didn't know what the hell any of it was. It was just writing on walls. I couldn't decipher if it was gang graffiti or stoner graffiti or civilian graffiti or political graffiti, or like pervert graffiti, whatever it was. I just all thought it was kind of neat. And it's the only thing in my life that's held my attention, for the whole time. You go through phases. As a little kid, I was really into like baseball and reading the newspaper first thing in the morning and checking the box scores. And, I was into like fucking RC cars and, dumb shit like that. And, get into different kinds of music, whether it's rap or rock or hardcore. I went through a heavy cycling stage when I was in New York. But it always comes back to Philly. It always comes back to graffiti, which is, aside from like depression and anxiety, there's like my oldest friends.
Yeah. Yeah. And you never, I mean, you've taken just naturally your foot off the gas pedal. You can't keep going the same way that you've been going when you're like 20 years old, 17 years old, 21 years old.
And I don't think it's healthy to do so. And I sort of question the dudes that stay that steady. Maybe they don't have other things in their life. It's easy to get distracted by career and family and stuff like that. I think the average lifespan of a graffiti writer's activity is probably like 2 to 5 years, I would guess.
Yeah.
And it should be, mid, late teens to early, mid 20s. And then you check out.
Early, mid 20s?
Yeah.
And then you check out.
I think that's the average lifespan of a graffiti writer's career. When I was young, when I was a teenager, there was no such thing as a 25-year-old graffiti writer. Now there's dudes that are 50 plus. I'm barreling towards 50 myself. So we're sort of making up the history as we go at this point.
Do you view it any differently?
I guess yes and no. I think maybe I try to understand more why I do this shit. Whereas before it was just strict expression. And I didn't really like that word when I was younger. I think it didn't sound cool. I wanted it to be like strict damage, destruction, vandalism. Now it's more of like I can kind of see like the roots of it, whether it's me or other people. Like I think it comes from a variety of sources. I think with me personally, it comes from angst and wanting to impose on sort of the status quo of property be more valuable than life, and I like to decorate shit. So, and I also just like the application of paint on the stuff.
You know,
that gives me some sort of like some sort of primal feeling that I can't explain. It's impossible to explain to other people. It's like, some people are into fucking basketball or motorcycles or skydiving or fucking poker, whatever it is. Like no one can really explain like what those feelings mean to them unless it affects them personally. So I found this funny little niche when I was like 10 years old, and here I am, fucking you know.
So you were 10 when you became aware of Graph?
I was younger than 10. I was 10 when I first started tagging. And where I'm from, I'm not from the inner city. I'm from the suburbs. I'm from San Fernando Valley, like I said, but West Valley, which is like even like a little bit more quiet. So it's like Woodland Hills, Canoga Park, Calabasas. I went to high school in Calabasas. I was in Calabasas before Drake and fucking Kanye and what's that one dude from Canada? You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, Miley Cyrus, all these people. But what was the question again?
Just damn, what was the question again? Oh yeah, how old were you when you started?
Oh, yeah,
when you became aware of Graph? Okay, you said 10 years old.
So before 10, I was aware of it. I was probably say like 7, 8. I was like scribbling on bathroom walls. 10, I was like tagging. I was trying to figure out what the hell people were using. I didn't know what a mean streak was. I was like, you know, getting crayons. I'm like, that doesn't really look like what I want to look like. You know, stealing spray paint. Probably by 12, I was doing a little bit more. By 13, 14, I was painting the freeways in my area, which was the 101 freeway, Ventura freeway. And by 15, I was kind of up. And by 15, I got into MSK. And I met those dudes. Well, there wasn't really an MSK when I got an MSK. It was really just like a baby crew of AWR. And I wasn't very good at graffiti. I was doing a lot of graffiti. I think the dudes that were in AWR, they were a couple years older than me, which at that age is, you know, like a million years older. So they were like 18, 17, 18, 19, 20. You know, they had cars and apartments and shit like that, real adult stuff. And they could see that I maybe had potential. When I was 15, I looked like I was 12. So I looked like a little ass kid hanging around with these guys. And, you know, they sort of took me under the wing. Taught me this and that. A lot of hazing, a lot of fucking shit talking, a lot of like, you know, just like being hard on me. You know, half being mean, half, you know, just like trying to like sort of guide me in the right / wrong direction.
Yeah. So you were that age. You were talking about how a lot of people, when you get into Graph, you're not really doing it from like a good place. Like there's something going on inside when you're trying to get into it. You were saying how like when you were 17 years old, you were taking all these monumental risks for minimal gain. You're doing BNEs, you're into drugs, doing heavens, doing a lot of Graph. And while I just assume that the BNEs and the drugs and a lot of these monumental risks subsided a lot to the point where probably that you don't do them anymore, Graph did not. What do you think it is about Graph that it's just something that hasn't subsided? Like, it probably permeates tons of aspects of your life.
I think it just still gives me that fucking tickle, man. You know, I can still feel it in my heart. I can still feel my blood pressure rise and the pulse rate rise. And, you know, I don't do BNEs. I don't do any drugs. Coffee and weed is about the limit of it. Maybe a little holiday psychedelic, but, and you know, I'll still try to rack. I feel like that's essential. I don't believe in paying for supplies. You know, maybe a shopping cart here and there. I'm definitely not like an everyday. I don't live off racking by any means. I have like work and, you know, that sort of career that's outside of graffiti that's still painting related, but,
So what was your mindset like? I'm looking at the video of you at that talk show. How old were you?
17, 18.
What do you think your mindset was like at that time period of your life, and how did that talk show even come to be?
So my mindset was to crush shit, was that I could cure all my problems if I just did more graffiti. That it would cure my depression, that it would make me feel some sort of self-worth. The way that talk show came up is that the dude that shares a stage with me is Skept, who in the show comes off like the positive graffiti writer, but, you know, he's an older writer, probably has some not positive parts of his life, inner city rider, super good rider, super fucking solid crew, style fucking masters, real organic LA style crew. But he had the hookup, and they asked him to get a young active rider, you know, to be the yin yang sort of thing. Like, he's like the posse dude that was like, I'm gonna be a teacher in the inner city, and I'm just like, I just want to fuck shit up. I think they got me on there, and they want me to be like, you know, I'm expressing myself through spray paint, and, you know, kind of come at like an artsy point of view. And I get up there, and I'm like, I'm just speaking from the heart, talking about how I want to fuck shit up. And I, you know, in between takes, the producer's coming up to me, and they're like, "What the fuck are you talking about, dude?" I was like, "I'm just, this is what I'm talking about. This is how I feel." And
they didn't understand whatsoever.
No.
And some of the crowd was, they were fucking pissed.
Well, we almost got off. So in that crowd, there's some really good LA riders. There's Tribe, Oil, Eclipse, you know, an ex-girlfriend of mine, a couple UTIs, Snap UTI. And they almost got in a fight with these dudes behind them because they were like, you know, Taggers killed my homeboy. And then, like, my friends were like, you know, sorry, you know. And then they had to be like, those guys had to be escorted outside a different exit than my friends. So I also went on there because it's like, when that show came out, it was like at the height of like talk shows in general. So everything was like super sensationalized. And I went in there with that mentality, like, I got to say something funny or like ridiculous, you know. But when I got popped, maybe within the same year, they try to use that footage against me as like my like declaration. And I was like, nah, like, you ever watch Jerry Springer? Like, it's supposed to be fucking outrageous. And they're like, nope, you said this shit. And
did you have to sign papers to go on that shit? Because I mean, your identity is fully hidden.
Yeah, but I think they pay me like $50 or something like stupid. Yeah. So that talk show was like, it helped me like in the long run, because I got like a lot of rep off of it. But when I was sitting in court, I wasn't sure if that was such a good move.
Yeah, in the talk show, when your name comes up, it's like GK under it. That shit says, I think it said, has been to jail 3 times over graffiti. Yeah. So at 17, you had already been to jail 3 times over graffiti.
Yeah, and I did, like, as a teenager, I went to like a juvenile work camp, which was really rough. It was in L.A. Juvenile system has like 3% white people, and maybe like half those kids think they're Mexican or black. I don't think I'm either one. I'm not gang related. I'm not really good at fist fighting. So it was sort of an uphill battle. It's a lot of fist fights, a lot of shit like that. And then, and that's when I wrote the word gank, G-A-N-K, and the word G-K is derived from that. But I got out, and the whole time I sat in camp, I was, you know, I was like, I'm just going to get out and fuck shit up more. Now I have like a fucking vendetta. And I got out. I changed my name to GK. Went pretty close to All City, which is a hard thing to do in Los Angeles. It's a long distance, especially when you're a teenager and you don't have a car. And yeah, I crushed it. And then, you know, at this point, MSK was still a pretty small crew. There was maybe a dozen of us. Maybe less than that, you know. So, but those are sort of the building blocks of my graffiti career and my crew's career.
Yeah. So you're currently commander in chief of MSK. How did that come to be? I know you've been with that team for a while. And when I think about MSK, it's like there are tons of graffiti crews. There are so many graffiti crews, and very few that make an impact, even fewer that remain intact over a span of years. And you know, MSK did both of those things. They made an impact, and they've remained intact over a span of years. And they, from what I see, are just continuously pushing forward. What do you think it is about, when it comes to longevity of a crew, makes it that? When it comes to the worldwide influence of a crew, makes it that?
Well, I've been in MSK over 30 years. I got in the summer of 92. Originally, it was an offshoot of AWR. Both crews started in West LA. Eclipse is, he's the real leader. He's the glue. He's the mastermind behind all this stuff. I kind of joke because like maybe 13, 14 years ago, Eclipse asked me to take over. And, you know, I'm just happy enough all my friends were like okay with that. Because I'm not, some crews run differently. Like some crews are like, you write their three letters, but you're essentially writing the leader's crew. And you're essentially hitting this person up over and over again. This crew's never been like that. This is more of a co-op where we all sort of like pitch in. We have at least a dozen guys that could be their own leaders, or there are leaders in their own right. Some guys are leaders of their own crews. We probably have no less than half a dozen leaders of major crews in our crew. But like I said, we probably have like 10 to 20 different dudes that are leaders themselves. So I get the credit and respect because I'm the earliest guy who took this style and sort of set the blueprint. When I started writing MSK, nobody knew about MSK. There was no such thing as MSK, really. It was just three letters that the two guys wrote prior to me. So I went, essentially all city in Los Angeles, and then I expanded the reign from Tijuana to Vancouver, Canada, pretty much before we had nationwide recognition. And it was taking spots that maybe somebody would catch a tag on, maybe an outline, and I was trying to push a little further, do pieces. I was one of the first people to do what guys call nowadays walkouts, which are the support beams of bridges. I'd seen people do outlines, tags, maybe a fill-in. I was the first person that I saw to do pieces up there. I did a bunch of freeway signs, which in California we call heavens, and really just pushing those boundaries. And, I took Saber painting for the first time in his life, like bombing. He had been painting like drainage ditches out in Thousand Oaks. It's just a lot of first. And it's like, I think a lot of the newer guys, you know, guys that are either my age or younger, you know, maybe they were influenced by me and maybe I was their number one early on. So I led them before they were in the crew. So it's just a mutual respect thing. It's like I'm very honored to be able to say out loud that I help lead this crew. I'm not king of the crew by any means. It doesn't work like that. I can't tell anybody what to do. There's a lot of hard heads. There's a lot of strong opinions. And that's great. You know, it's like I can make suggestions. I have ideas. I called the last two meetings to get the guys together. And I get to speak and give little speeches in front of the guys. Yeah. So,
in terms of putting new people down and, you know, the future of the crew, where do you see that?
Well, we had a really big meeting maybe 6 months ago in L.A. in South Central. Maybe we had a little bit of a slow, little lull in activity for a while there. And we put about a dozen people in at one time. We've never done that before, not even close. And, all these people, some knew other people in MSK better than others, but essentially they all had some sort of connection. Some of the guys should have gone in like 20 years ago, like Dax and Beggar, but for whatever reason they didn't. But we also needed some new blood, you know. Like I'm old-ish. Some of the guys are old-ish. You know, we're the demographic graffiti's changed over the years, whereas it used to be like a super youth-oriented activity, where a bunch of teenagers. Now, if you're in your mid-20s, that's kind of young. See, we got a couple of young guys. We got Vane down there in Atlanta. He's young. We got a couple other guys. And it's worked out well. Like, we've had a good 6 months of activity. a lot of new graffiti. The guys are down in Atlanta right now crushing shit. We got guys in Mexico City right now crushing shit. And it's been a success so far. Out of the dozen guys that we got in, I was expecting maybe one or two to go off the rails, and maybe it's like a bad decision. Maybe we rushed in it too soon. But so far, so good.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've been seeing the action. I've been seeing really pushing the limit. You know what I mean? Really pushing the limit of spots and what is possible, and very, very, very like, from an outsider's perspective, very MSK. Taking it back to painting LA and going all city there, and how it's a long distance. And, you know, I've been to LA a number of times. I love going there, but it's so different in terms of graffiti. It's different than New York. New York's a really walking, it's a walking city. And you have that, you know, the MTA in New York that is like, it makes it a walking city. You could live in the farthest part of Queens and still be in Manhattan every day, you know, doing shit. How was your life when you were in the height of going all city in Los Angeles? How was painting there with the nature of LA, with the gangs in the neighborhoods and the social conflicts and all that shit? What was the type of shit that your life was about?
So, getting around LA is tough. I had to rely on public transit and other people's cars. Basic cultures in general, our graffiti culture in LA is a little bit more gang-based oriented. But that doesn't mean we get along with gangs. Gangs actually kind of hate graffiti writers out there. And it makes it mega dangerous. Yeah, it's like you're dodging this gang stuff. But also, we got like a quarter of the guys in our crew. I wouldn't say quarter. Maybe that's a bad stat. But we have, you know, gang members in our crew too. It's just the way it is, you know, like... But what were you saying as far as like...
In terms of what your life was like, you know, now you're living in Philadelphia, yeah, and your lifestyle is probably so different from what it was at that time period. Like, how many nights a week would you go out painting? What was like...
I go out as much as I could. I didn't really have anything else to worry about. Like, now I have bills and kids and all this fucking adult shit, which, you know, it's great, and but it's like, it's extra. You know, there it's like, I get in trouble, you know, and I didn't really give a shit. Like, I didn't care if I fucking died. I didn't care who I hurt. I didn't care how it affected my family. Now I do. Now I have maybe some sort of conscience. And I got to look. I didn't really expect to live past 25. You know, like, I was like, I didn't take pictures of stuff. Partially because I was like worried that my house would get raided and that'd be used as evidence against me. And also because I thought that was it, you know. And I also knew that other people were documenting my stuff. There's a couple guys in the crew that were really good about getting pictures. And I also knew other people that were just, like, photo people before there was, like, internet stuff.
So you took no pictures of your stuff?
No, I don't have any. If you look at my Instagram, like, 98% of the photos are not mine.
Yeah, it's all shit that people took. Wow.
Yeah. And, I mean, look, I probably should have, you know. Like, yeah. There's tons of stuff that's missing. Like, almost all my early stuff is, like, of all the, I probably did close to 40, 45 freeway signs, heavens. There's maybe photos of, like, five or six of them, you know. So I wish that I did take pictures of that. And back in the day also, people didn't take pictures of bombing as much as they did, like, pieces.
Yeah.
You know, you, like, spend time, do a piece. It wouldn't take pictures of walls or just like crush with tags or throw ups or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So when you're during that time and you get arrested for the first time, or you're sitting in jail, did you care at all?
I cared because I feel like a fucking caged bird. You know, I don't really want to be told when to eat or take a shit or shower. I'm not at all down with gang culture and that whole lifestyle. So that part's really tough. And then, like, when I had to do, like, a bigger stretch, when I went to the pen, I mean, that stuff, it, like, you know, you're in there for, like, a year, and you're like, I'm still not done. Like, I still have so much more fucking time to do.
How long were you in there for?
The longest stretch I did, I got sentenced 3 years, and I did half time on that.
So a year and a half?
Yeah, a year and a half.
How was that?
It was awful. You know, it was like, you know... away from my friends and family. I was in a prison down by the Mexican border where we got Mexican radio stations. And, it's like dumb violent. It fucking smells. You're about around a bunch of fucking dudes all day. It's no fun. And I talked about that culture before. It's like, it has its own language and rules, and I'm just not fucking into any of that stuff. If anyone listening is like, spent a significant amount of time in jail, they'll know that some people don't care. They're just like, whatever, I'm just gonna do a year or two here or there. I'm not down with doing an hour, you know, like that shit's fucking for the birds, you know. But it's no way to live, and you know, I think part of graffiti is that sort of like free spirit aspect. And jail's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You're trapped. You feel trapped. Wild. In fact, for a solid, like, I don't know, I had maybe 20 years of my life where I didn't have a single dream that didn't have some sort of graffiti involved in it. But while I still do have tons of dreams about graffiti, it's slowed down a little bit. But I do have dreams about jail, and the dreams about jail are being in an unfamiliar place and being trapped, and the recurring theme is that I just can't get out, and I'm lost in the system, and my people don't know where I am, and I don't know where I am, and it's dangerous, and it smells, and you know, it's like this, like, it's a horrible feeling. If, you know, it's like you're trapped under ice type thing, but like you're in this system.
You know, I've never been to prison. You know, you see in movies, you see in news, you see on TV, you hear like 5-year bid, 10-year bid. So then you hear 1-year bid and you're like, oh, that's not that long. Nah. Like, just objectively speaking, that's a long fucking time. If you were to go in there like February 1st and then a whole year of your life passes by, you get out February 1st of whatever the next year is. That's mad time, especially if, like, you're in a type of system where it's essentially a living hell. You're in prison.
Yeah.
LA, I feel like California West Coast prisons are known for having, just being, like, you're in the belly of the beast. Like, you are in what you think of when you think of, like, dangerous American prison system. Was there any situation where they try to have you join any gangs, that click with your race, or were you able to avoid that?
Well, I will say a couple of the guys in the crew I've done, you know, like more than 10 years. So, you know, sometimes some listeners might think that, you know, a year and a half is not that big a deal. But you go in there, and especially LA County, LA has the biggest county jail in the world, apparently. There's like 25,000 people in there. 25,000 people just in LA County.
That's crazy. Right?
California together, state system, county system all together, has the second biggest slave force in the world. It's second to only China. So it's a money-making fucking thing. There's a reason why people get stuck in there for bullshit. You know, in California, you get petty theft with a prior, you get 2 years. You get caught racking a can of spray paint, that's petty theft. You get caught racking it again, that's 2 years in prison.
Wow.
So it's set up to keep you trapped in there. When I went, so juvenile system's different. It's more just like, little gangsters, like, punching each other in the face and stuff and gangbanging. And, you know, street rules apply the same in the juvenile system. When you get to adult system, it becomes a racial thing. So, you know, Bloods and Crips, both black, so they all hang together. They might be mortal enemies on the fucking street. They're best friends in there. Asians click with blacks. Mexicans have their different, they call them cars in there. So they have, you know, Sereños, and there's a couple like Mexican gangs that are not Sereños, and they have their own thing. That's in Southern California. I'm white, graffiti writer. LA County has some white people, and I would say 2/3 of them are just like dudes that got like DUIs or like spousal abuse or some dumb shit. But then you got like the Peckerwoods and like the skinheads and stuff like that, which are, you know, a little tougher. I went in there really not wanting to be, I don't call myself a Peckerwood. I don't associate with any of those things. I'm a graffiti writer at the end of the day. But there's been a beef, and I don't know if it's still as harsh as it was in the 90s, but Mexican gangs, which control LA County Jail, don't like graffiti writers because we sort of like walk this fine line of being like gangsterish but not gangsterish, and we have mixed races in our crews, and so like people, you know, they're like, they call you Wood for short if you're white, and they're like, "What's up, Wood?" And I'm like, "I'm not a Wood," and they're like, "Well, what are you?" I'm like, "I'm just fucking me," you know. But unless you're really fucking bad, unless you can like fucking, you know, really get down like that, like you leave yourself open. And
meaning by not associating with what they think you are.
Yeah. I mean, you sort of like, you have to choose which side you're going to be on. So it's like, you'll meet white dudes that want to be Serenos, and they'll have to put in extra work for that car. You know, some guys will be like, "Well, you're going to be a Sereno because you're a graffiti writer and you're Italian." And I'm like, "Yeah, but listen to the way I talk. I'm not like, I don't know, I can't speak Spanish. I'm not from a fucking neighborhood, you know?" So there's a bit of like trying to figure it out. And I probably made some mistakes along the way, probably embarrassed myself. But, you know, I never got like stomped out. I never got stabbed. I never got violated in some fucking major way. And you see that happen. You see these fucking nightmare situations. You see people get all their teeth fucking knocked out. You see people get stabbed. You see people get raped. You see like all the crazy shit you think about jail. It happens in LA County. And LA County is like a fucking dungeon. So you get in spots where you don't see daylight for weeks. I had a time in LA County where I didn't see the sunlight for a month. Literally. I didn't see my reflection because there's no mirrors in there. Okay? So think every day you see the sun. Every day you see your face. Think of going a month without seeing either one. It's weird. You disassociate with yourself. Like, you become less human. And
you literally will become, like, animalistic.
You become animalistic. And it's hard. It's like a mental struggle. All these things are meant to be mental games anyway. And, you know, you see people go in there and they pop out the other side and they're a different human. They become, you know, institutionalized or whatever. And I have a couple friends that, you know, they got out like 10 years ago and they're still like walking the yard in their mind, you know. When I got out, you know, it took a second to readapt, but I made sure that I left that mentality in there. You know, like, I wasn't down with that racist shit. I wasn't down with that ultra violence. It also like checked me to let me know if ever I had a doubt in my mind, I'm not a tough guy. You know, you can go in there and not be a tough guy. Just don't act like you're a tough guy. And also, if you're not a tough guy, sometimes you got to get punched in the face. Like, you got to at least stand your ground and not fucking curl up in a ball. And because no one's going to get credit for beating up a fucking someone that can't fight that well, you know. But you also get in situations where someone's not going to be that nice. And you just have to fucking figure it out, you know.
Yeah.
Luckily for me, I have the ability to get along with whoever. Yeah. You're a fucking surfer, you're a gangster, you're a fucking drug addict, you're a normal ass dude, you're a fucking... You know, I can find maybe just like a sliver of humanity or common ground with most people. And that's what made it so I could survive.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're in there, it's going to be survival is the key at the end of the day. And it's wild because you're in there for graffiti, you know?
Yeah. People thought I would lie because I'd be in there. You know, you get the conversations. What are you here for? How much time are you facing? And, you know, they're throwing like a decade at me at certain points. And they're like, "What the fuck did you write on?" You know, like, I just sold fucking like 100 pounds of meth, you know, like people are in there for like statutory rape, fucking, and they're getting fucking less time than me, or even like proposed less time than me. So like some people are like, look at me like, "No, what are you really in here for?"
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, you know, and then you get like the gangster dudes. They're like, "You probably shouldn't tell people you're here for graffiti."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "What am I going to make up same here for car theft?" Like, yeah. That's what I'm here for, you know?
So after that year and a half in there, you came out and you wanted to bomb more.
Yeah, again, just like it just fucking pissed me off, man. Like, I was just like, so I lost the age of 23. I went in 22, came out 24. At that point, I had served 2.5 years of my life. In California, if you do 13 months clean on parole and you're a nonviolent offender and you don't violate, they kick you loose. The last month on parole, I got arrested 4 times. None of it got back to my PO. I knew that once I discharged my number, I had to get the fuck out because I wanted to write graffiti. I may or not have changed my name again. And I knew I needed to get out because I knew I was going to turn into one of those dudes. Like, I feel like I just got through the system without, like, any real damage, you know? Like, none of those super awful things happened to me. You know, it's fucking boring, all that stuff. But so I decided I got to get the fuck out of L.A. And 2 weeks after I got off parole, I moved to Atlanta because Sever and Hintz lived down there. And that was my first hookup outside of L.A., outside of California. And lived there for about 6 months, visited New York in that time. And I was like, I'm moving here next. And, hooked up with all the Iraq guys. Went to New York with probably like 300-400 cans of paint that I got in Georgia. With aspirations of writing more graffiti than I probably did in New York. I think I got distracted by nightlife. And then...
it was like early 2000s, right?
Yeah, I moved to New York in March 2002. And... yeah, immediately got, like, caught up in the social circles and having fun and staying out all night. And, you know, Iraq boys fucking go hard with the fucking partying. I was never, like, part of the ski team or nothing like that, but definitely, like, drinking and popping pills and things like that. But then, you know, I lived in New York for almost 5 years. Spent 3.5 of those as a bike messenger. Spent my first real winters in New York. Didn't know how to dress for cold weather. I was wearing like 2 pairs of jeans and 3 pairs of tube socks. And then I had a baby up there. And I was living in Brooklyn. And I lived in essentially like a fucking pillbox that cost a fortune. Bathroom was so small, my knees touched the wall when I sat on the toilet. But I was always visiting friends in New York and in Philadelphia. Yeah. And I like Philadelphia. And I gave Philly a shot. And I've been here 18 years now.
What do you like about Philadelphia? What made you want to move here? Was it like a change in life? You could take a little bit step away from the craziness that is New York or the craziness that was your life in LA?
Well, I made certain decisions when I came to Philly. I didn't want to be part of social circles. I didn't want to hang out with writers too much, which some Philly writers don't like that about me. And it's not like I don't think I'm better than anybody. I just wanted to change the direction of what I was doing. When I lived in New York, I'd be at a bar and I'd be out like every fucking night and I'd meet all these writers and I'd get shit-faced. And then I'd be at a bar another night and I see like a group of writers in a corner and I can see them looking at me. I know they knew what I wrote and there's like whisper point. And I'm like, I don't even know who the fuck these dudes are, man. That didn't really make me feel good. Plus I had a brand new baby. My eldest son was 2.5 months when I moved here. So I was like, I'm going to get a fucking square job. Fuck the bullshit. And, but Philadelphia is like a sort of a more livable city.
Yeah.
You know, it's older city. You know, it's a quote unquote real city. It's got grid and all that stuff. But I lived in, the Germantown neighborhood of, Philadelphia for essentially the whole time. And it's not as densely populated as like South Philly or something like that. But it still feels real. I can still paint here if I want to. You know, it has all the things for a graffiti writer. You can get up. There's all the things to paint. There's trains, there's walls, there's freeways. There's a fucking super long history. Best hand styles in the world. And yeah, I'm raising 2 sons in the city.
Yeah, you're enjoying it. You like it.
Yeah, I like it enough. I can't picture myself moving out anytime soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even when you go to LA, when you go to New York, you still feel like...
I like New York a lot. It's really fun. I don't know if I want to live there. I love California. I love my friends. I miss my friends. I miss the beaches and the mountains and shit like that. But I'm cool here. I feel like it's sort of my own lane. It's sort of like a little bit of self-imposed isolation because I don't have like... there's no MSK here in Philadelphia. But I do have like a handful of graffiti writers here that I hang out with. But I just do like normal fucking square shit. I just fucking work all day, bust my ass, get dirty, come home, shower, go to sleep.
That's good though. That's healthy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. It's kind of what I got to do to be, to lead my family.
Yeah.
You know.
What is the story behind the screw sacer in on Canal Street? Because I look at that every single day. And to me, I feel like it's been there for so long that, yeah, people 100% appreciate and respect it. But, like, when I look at that, for some reason to me, that is probably not even because you're sitting here. For me, the most, like, I love that spot. When I think of New York Graffiti, like, I look at that spot and that's, like, it's, for some reason, it being right next to the sky. And there's a bunch of rollers that are right next to, like, that building. There's the skyline right after. It's just no buildings behind it that you can't see. It's just the blue sky. And, you know, now it's grilled, but when you hit it, it wasn't
there's
grilled.
There's only, like, there's a little bit of graffiti up there. There's, I think, one time had a roller hangover.
Even just a few years ago, it wasn't grilled the way it is now.
I know, it's fucking crazy now. But I'm really lucky that I have two spots in New York with Say still. They're just chilling. One on BQE and the one you're talking about. I guess I'm sort of letting the cat out the bag, but Sace was an amazing human being. He also knew a ton of people in downtown Manhattan. Everything from, like, fucking bummy ass, like, bar people to, like, fucking millionaires that own tons of property. So we had access to the building, and he had never really done a roller before. We used Rust-Oleum bucket paint for that. Like, he was just like, he had no idea. He's like, "What do you do?" Like, I was like, "I got you. We'll hook this up," you know. And you know, we knocked it out. You know, that street corner, like, of anything I've ever painted, that's, like, the thing that gets flicked the most, just because it's, like, the center of the earth, you know? And I'm lucky. That's been running 21 years now.
It's wild. And it really is, like, the center of the earth. That exact intersection. It's not like, you know, 42nd Street. It's not like Bowery. But for whatever reason, for me, that intersection is more than those. In terms of graffiti spot,
it feels super New York. But right now, I saw someone else just did a big old roller there too. It looks fucking awesome. It's neat. It just, like, keeps collecting and keeps collecting, and it gets better with age. You know, we use the right supplies, so it's holding up.
Yeah.
You know.
With that being said, yo, if you have anything else to say, I got to say thank you for doing this. Thank you for, you know, what you've done. Whether you consciously realize it or not, a lot of people have their eye on you in terms of a source of inspiration, from kids who are younger to kids who are older, and just very significant within graffiti. So, you know, I appreciate you doing this, and it's an honor for me.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, so I guess shout outs or whatever. It's my entire crew: MSK, Mad Society Kings, AWR, Artwork Rebels, and then my other crews, IRAC and D30, and all my other little crews, AD also, IFK, all my dead friends. You know who you are. And, you know, if graffiti is something you want to do, and you want to do it the right way, there's going to be some consequences, whether you're hurt yourself or you hurt your family or you sit in jail or whatever the case. It's a commitment. If you want to, it's, I guess it's just like anything. If you want to be fucking good at football, you're going to have to, like, fucking just dedicate your life to it. You know, I don't think I started off with, like, incredible artistic skills, but I have a deep love for graffiti and wall writing, and it means a lot to me. And I'm very fortunate to be in this position where something I've dedicated my life to, I'm at this point, and it's like I'm a fan of graffiti still. You know, I love graffiti, and you know, I kind of, like, I'm happy that I did make those sacrifices. I'm happy that I don't have to fucking go out every single night. You know, I'm happy with my friends. I'm happy that this crew has grown to something it's turned into. I'm happy that we're on all five continents, you know, like, and it's an LA crew, and it's an LA-based crew, and we still got a lot left in the tank. You know, there's probably going to be more people put in the future. You know, last year we put in Rams from New Zealand. like, fucking guy's insane, dude. And like, he's doing, he did every single system in the United States. He's done a bunch of fucking systems in Europe. He's doing those fucking repelling things. That's MSK style graffiti. You know, that's pushing that shit, dude. Pushing it extra fucking hard. That's really the spirit of this fucking crew. And that's sort of what we're looking for. Not everyone's going to be Rams. Not everyone's going to be, you know, Revoke or Rhyme or any of these other guys that are super fucking awesome, powerful graffiti writers and artists. But that is the spirit. And, you know, maybe we'll do another interview in 15 years and we'll be even bigger than we are right now. So that's the goal.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Peace.
Cool, man.